Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the May 20 session, focusing on John 15, 26 through chapter 16, verse 15, Truth Telling. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Crystal Shepherd.
And I'm Daniel Glaze.
Well, Bert could not be with us this evening, and, you know, he gave me a reason. I guess it's a good reason. Apparently, both of his sons are graduating from college. One with a bachelor's degree and one with a master's degree. So we celebrate with you, Bert, and with your family and your sons on this big occasion, and hope you have a wonderful week celebrating these milestones. I know at the school where I am, we have graduation next Saturday. Nikki, is it the same for you guys?
Yeah, it's the same for us.
It's graduation next season.
Yeah. It is.
Mm-hmm. At least as we record this.
Right. Right.
So, well, it's a fun time. Lots of people wrapping up important stages in their journeys. So if you are a graduate or have one in your life, I hope you'll enjoy this time with them. Well, Daniel, we are continuing in our study in the book of John. Would you be able to help us get started in this conversation?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Dear listeners, this is the last week we're in John. Some of you may be breathing a sigh of relief that we're soon moving on to something else, but I have to tell you, I love old John. Think back to those lovely words that open his gospel. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things came into being through him, and without him not one thing came into being. What has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. Man, I wish I could write like that. And in the passages we've studied recently, we've received these gems. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another as I have loved you. Whoever does not love me does not keep my words. I am giving you these commands that you may love one another. Today we're continuing this section of John, which we call Jesus' Farewell Discourses, where he's preparing his disciples for the time very shortly when he will leave them. They've had a hard enough time being lovely when he was with them. How in the world could they continue without him? But Jesus says, you'll recall, "Don't worry, I will not leave you orphaned. I am coming to you." Now that's strange, I think. Here we have Jesus leaving, but he's saying, "I'm coming to you." What's that about? I wonder if that's because Jesus knew that he would continue to be with his disciples, but he was coming to them in a new way, in an entirely different way. Jesus would not return to them as a human being, but he would send them some help, an advocate. In this particular passage, the Greek word Jesus uses here is paraclete. It literally means called to the side of. It's the same word we use for a lawyer or a counselor, a therapist, someone who stands beside you in a time of trial. George Mason, a friend of mine who pastors in Dallas, says this, "At their best, lawyers serve as an advocate. We may make tons of lawyer jokes, but that's what they do, advocate for us. They counsel and comfort and give aid and speak on behalf of their clients. Jesus did that for his disciples when he was with them, and he will not stop now that he's going away. He promises that nothing they will face, will they face it alone. He will be there to defend and stand up for them. So we can live with the courage to be faithful, no matter the cost." Jesus was calling his disciples to live and love in ways that seemed impossible. He knew they couldn't do it, not without the advocate, his Holy Spirit. And the advocate wasn't just for Jesus' disciples, but also for you and me. The advocate forever ties us to Christ, forever ties us to his love for us and for this world. So it was with Jesus and his first followers, so it is with you and me. We are not alone. Jesus has sent us an advocate, his Holy Spirit. So even at the times of greatest struggle, when we think we can't go on, we know in the depths of our hearts that all is not lost, and we are never without hope. Jesus, Emmanuel, God with us. By the power of the Advocate, God is always with us. And that's a little background on our text for today.
I'm curious listening to Daniel's intro. Do any of us have stories when someone was an advocate for us? I mean, I have one. I'll start. And it's not particularly poignant, but it popped in my head because, you know, this person was an advocate for me. But when I was younger, I read voraciously. I mean, I just read like crazy. And there was a little small public library downtown in the little town where, a little county seat town in southern Arkansas. And I would go in there and check out books. And especially in the summer, I would just read like crazy. And one time I went to check out some books, and the librarian would not let me because she said, these books are too advanced for you. You can't read these. So one of my school teachers happened to be nearby, and she overheard and came over, and in a very kind and helpful way, she explained to the to the librarian that I was capable of this and that she should allow me to check out the books, and I was allowed to. But I mean, it was to me an example, because if I had not had someone there to advocate for me who had the ability to do so, the credibility to do so, I would not have gotten to read the books I wanted to read.
Mm.
Not a big deal. I was little, but still, it was a big deal at the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a huge deal for a kid, I think. It makes an incredible impression when someone does that for you.
And I remember it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really interested in that story, David, and I can't, if you'll forgive me, I can't recall a time in my own life. I'm sure, you know, we've all had these experiences. One is not coming to mind, but I'm sure I've experienced those times where someone said something to the effect of, it's okay if you don't fit in here, or you don't, you know, it's okay, you're with me. You know, one of those,
yeah,
if they don't let you in, you tell them you're with me. Those, that kind of experience where we may have felt all alone, but we knew that we had someone who would stand with us, help us to experience whatever it was that we were desiring. And I'm sure, you know, we've all had experiences like that in our lives.
My mom was an advocate for me when I was a kid, but it's the kind of thing that I didn't understand it at the time. But now that I'm older and know what she did, I realized that I was fortunate because not all parents can do what she did. So school was really hard for me. And in second grade, I really started falling behind. And this was before we knew a whole lot about what people call ADD or ADHD. But it turns out that I have ADD, and my mom really started asking questions when I started falling behind, because she knew I was capable, and so it didn't make sense why things weren't working. And so she made sure I got to the right doctors and that I got medication that was helpful. And she stood up for me, and she found teachers who would do the same. And when I look back on that, I realized that her advocacy helped set me on a path that helped me to enjoy school rather than to have a really negative relationship with school. And that's been really important and good in my life. And so mine is that kind of experience where I look back and see the way my own mom's advocacy on my behalf helped me.
You know, I think about times my brother stood up for me or things like that. But when I think of advocacy, my son had some health issues when he was 5, and we went to a doctor and tried to have the doctor listen and to take, you know, what I was saying seriously. And this doctor just didn't hear what I was saying. And of course, when I think of advocacy, I think of this like constant presence and this tenacity, I guess you'd say, of being with and also speaking for and speaking out. And kind of had to have that for my own child to go, no, wait a second. So what I did is I kind of laid everything out for this, for a new doctor. I kept an Excel spreadsheet, and I'm embarrassed to say that I'm not good with computers. And so I couldn't shrink the spreadsheet. So I printed out this spreadsheet, and it was like 4 8.5 by 11 pages, like taped together. And like I unfolded it and I laid it out, and I'm like, here, this is what's going on. And it was this like chart that I'd kept. But when I hear advocacy, I think about this, mm-hmm. not just being beside, but kind of like speaking for those who may not be able to even speak for themselves, those that can't get that out and maybe aren't able to be heard. And so, yeah, that, you know, I think about that. Even when I think about the story about my brother, like a girl was being mean to me and she hit me with a stick and he yanked at her hand. He's like, "You will not do that to my sister." You know, it's like I couldn't say anything because she just hit me with a stick, but he was there to speak and there to be with me and there to bear witness to, but also to say, this is not okay.
Nikki, I was curious about the ways that you had come at this passage. Do you want to talk with us a little about that?
Well, sure, yeah. So in the bio background notes for the rest of the curriculum, I kind of zeroed in on the idea that the advocate, the one who advocates for us and on our behalf, is also the one who reveals truth to us. And so I really put a lot of my background information on that part of the text. And so I think I like the idea of thinking about how the Spirit moves among us now and how the Spirit stirs things for us and helps us to see things, reveals truth to us. And so when I was working on this whole idea of Spirit as truth teller, then it reminded me of this article that I read by Nadia Boltz-Weber. It was called Me Too, or hashtag Me Too, and she wrote it for the Washington Post. It was a few weeks ago, maybe 2 months ago. And in the article, we'll post a link to it, but in the article, she talked about how we are in an apocalypse, and that's a good thing. Said that the Greek word for apocalypse really means to reveal or to uncover. And so she paints this great image in the article where an apocalypse is a peeling back of whatever it is that's been covering what's true. And then she hones in on the Me Too movement and says, sexual assault is not new, people. It's not like it just started happening in the last few years and we're learning about it, but rather it has happened for all time. And we are just now beginning to hear the stories of women who have faced sexual assault. And that our job then is to cooperate with the Spirit and continue to peel back and continue to reveal what has been hidden. And so in the context of the Me Too movement, the idea that this violence against vulnerable people, most often women, though stories are coming out and it seems that men, the percentage at which men have been sexually assaulted is higher than we thought. I saw something yesterday that said 1 in 6 men have faced sexual assault. And so I think it's important to remember that. But this idea that we're called to cooperate with the Spirit to help reveal those things. Well, and I'll say it'll also, I think it can translate to other issues. Like Nadia Boltz-Weber focused in on Me Too, but if we, for my own life, as I have begun to understand the complexities of racial tensions in our country, mm-hmm. and I have started that, you know, those layers have begun to peel back for me. And I feel like every time I turn around, there's some new truth to learn about what it means to live as a person of color in our country, and find myself unsure of how deep that hole is going to go, how deep yeah. or how much truth has been covered up, and how, you know, how much will we see once we really uncover what's there.
Same thing around poverty.
Yes.
The yeah. views and perceptions that often we don't even realize that we have, mm-hmm. as we begin to see the truth about them and the truth about people who live in poverty or who face food insecurity. I mean, there's so many places where these layers need to be peeled back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, okay, we're people that want to say, gosh, we care about other people. We love other people. We want to do the right thing. And then when we realize we're part of something mm-hmm. that, or maybe even perpetuating systems that, mm-hmm. that are oppressive, unhelpful, mm-hmm. bring suffering. I mean, that's not a fun thing to realize, to have that peeled back.
Mm-mm. Sometimes mm-hmm. you just want to stick it back down.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, that's a lot to look at. Mm-hmm. Let's do that hurts.
Next week.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll think about that tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think there are kind of a couple of reasons that it hurts. And I think some of it is that coming to terms with our own complicity in detrimental systems in our society. But then sometimes I think it also is hard because, oh, it just hurts when we realize the pain that other people have gone through. I mean, it hurts, and it's a lot to bear. But then we have to think about what the people who have been covered up have had to bear. So
This layers metaphor is an interesting one for me, because, you know, everybody on the podcast is so much nicer and less judgmental than I am. But the far more comfortable thing for me is to say, no, those men who beat their wives, they're the abusive ones. You know, those white men marching in Charlottesville, they're the racists. Mm-hmm. The very difficult and uncomfortable mm-hmm. layer that I need to look under is, those ways that I have benefited from my own privilege.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
And I don't want to look at that. I want to say, no, I'm a progressive male. I'm part of the equality movement. And, you know, well, I hope that I am in some mm-hmm. ways. I know that as a white male in the South, as a minister, I've had an easier time than my sisters in ministry have. And for me to see my own self, maybe not as a direct contributor, but certainly a benefactor of the situation, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is a painful one, but a necessary one, if we're going to have truth and help others live into that truth, and if we believe Jesus, that's what will set us free.
Crystal, I may mangle this, so you'll have to correct me, but are we talking in some ways about the spirit playing a role of confrontation, you know, in the sense that in therapy, don't you sometimes need to confront to get the truth out? Because until that's out there, you can't get better.
Yeah. I mean, and as I'm listening to you all speak about this and I'm kind of absorbing all of what you're saying. Yes. I mean, you know, I even had an instance today where I'm sitting in the counseling office, and that's the hard part about that role as advocate, because, you know, Daniel talked about lawyers and counselors and how they come alongside, but part of that coming alongside is actually confronting and holding mirrors up, and that's not a fun role to be in. I mean, I'm gonna clue you guys in. Like, I like to be liked. I don't want to come up and rub up against someone the wrong way. And, you know, even today, I had a client that there was a situation, and I mentioned, you know, this relationship that this person had had, and ooh, there was some bristling, and there was a complete change of the subject. And I let that go for a little bit, and then I brought it back around again and brought it to the forefront again. And when I did, the walls just fell. And you talk about those layers peeled away and tears flowed. And there was this real, honest conversation about, yes, that is where the pain lies. And I was telling a friend later, I said, I had one of those moments where hope rang through, because I have such a hard time, even though I say, like, I'm kind of like Pollyanna-like and want to believe in hope. Like, out of that confrontation, hope came out of that. I could see the movement of the Spirit in that person's life, and it came from this push against what the old structures in this person's life were. So I think 100% that I think that's part of what makes us uncomfortable about the Spirit, is that the Spirit cannot be contained. and the Spirit moves where the Spirit will. Mm-hmm. And we can try to clamp that Spirit down, but the Spirit's going to find a way in our own lives, in the lives of others. And I think even what we're seeing with, you know, the climate that we see even in our own country, like the Spirit is moving. And those layers are being peeled back. And the Spirit is putting things in the forefront. And it's causing a lot of questions to be asked and a lot of changes to be made. So 100%, I think the Spirit the movement of the Spirit involves some confrontation. Yikes.
Yeah. Which I wonder if that's part, I don't, from my tradition in the, you know, this branch of the Protestant church, you know, we tended to keep emotions pretty much under wraps, and, you know, we sat pretty still in our pews. And, you know, the talk of the Spirit was had because it was part of the Trinity and part of the theology we needed to attend to. But in reality, the last thing we wanted was something loose like the Spirit, which might confront us, might make us see in the mirror, might make us put light on something we'd rather keep in the dark. Yeah, that's... the Spirit's troublesome.
Well, I think the Spirit, kind of like we talk about these layers, asks us to lay things bare. And, you know, even in my own life, I like when those moments happen, those are scary moments to go, the Spirit is obviously saying something to me right now and asking me to move and asking me to do. I mean, it's kind of like, I remember, like, you know, we talk about conversion experiences and that fear of stepping out into the aisle, but it's on this like bigger scale of, okay, I liken it to, I say it's my Indiana Jones moments where in Indiana Jones in the Last Crusade, he's there and he's got to get across to the Grail, and like he sees this cavern. Yeah. And he just steps. And that's what I feel like it is with the Spirit. Like, wow, that Spirit lays it open, and then it's like, okay, it's time to step.
Friends, I'm like you. I feel like the Spirit is definitely at work and moving. And I think while that can be frightening for us, threatening even, because we all have things in the dark, that it is also a real word of hope, like you were saying, Crystal, in that, you know, for many of our churches, we seem to have this sense that, you know, where do we go from here? What do we do? And yet the Spirit is all over the place working to, you know, reveal injustices and bring healing. What a wonderful work for churches to be part of. And maybe part of the next thing that we are being called to do is to make right some of these wrongs in our culture, in our lives, in our world. And the church can do more than we think, I think, with the Spirit's guidance and help. Mm-hmm. This is a helpful, hopeful word. I'd like to close with some of your words, Nikki, from your video script. I really like, you wrote, Jesus says that when the Holy Spirit comes, it will prove the world wrong about three things. Those things are sin, righteousness, and judgment. Jesus is saying the world thinks it knows how these things work, but they have it all wrong. There's a lot of good things for the church to teach and to show and to be part of. Maybe we just need to get to it. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, David.
Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.